Here's Total Access.
Touchdown, Tampa Bay!
With your host, TJ Reeves.
Fire the cannon!
On 620 WDAE, home of the Buccaneers.
And here we are one more time on a Friday night to end the 2012 regular season. The 2012 calendar year is about to be over with. And we're in to talk Buccaneer football for the full hour tonight with a guy that is a great comeback story for 2012. And we say hello, good evening, and welcome to Buccaneers Total Access to number 91, Daquan Bowers. Good to see you. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate your willingness to sit down here before the regular season finale. As I alluded to there with the audience, you have come back from a serious offseason injury, an Achilles injury, to play this year. So let's start with that. What has the recovery been like? What has the season been like after having an offseason injury like you've had to be able to make it back?
It's been long. It's been extremely long. You know, coming from an injury like that, you know, I don't think people realize how hard it is on you, you know, not being able to walk, not even being able to do anything for yourself, having crutches, not even being able to fix yourself a glass of water without somebody carrying it to the couch for you. You know, it's just it's just a bad deal. But, you know, I was blessed that I had good trainers here at Tampa, you know, and a strength coach that was willing to work one-on-one with me and enhance my, you know, my abilities to strengthen it. You know, that was the big issue, you know, strengthening it. And once I started back playing, keeping it, you know, strong enough to deal with the cutting and the running and not swelling up and poofing up on me. And I hadn't had any issues out of it. You know, I hadn't had any setbacks, any swelling or anything since I've started back. So I've truly been blessed.
We're going to talk a lot about a lot of different things with Daquan, including this comeback story tonight. You are welcome to dial us up. Here's how you do it. 990-4620 if you're in Hillsboro. If you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll free 1-800-596-BUCKS. Wherever you can hear the show tonight outside the Tampa Bay area, that's your toll-free number. If you're using technology, whatever the case is, to hear us on the Buccaneers Radio Network, 1-800-596-2827 is the phone number to join us here this evening outside of the Tampa Bay area. You can also tweet in a question or two. Do it at Buck Sideline Guy, B-U-C, Buck Sideline Guy, with the Twitter questions and comments, and we'll pass those along as we go. So I like to, on Friday especially, and we've done this all season long going into the game, week of preparation is basically done. You guys have been on the practice field, have been studying in the film room, been in the weight room, been in the training room, whatever the case is. How has the week gone in preparation for the Falcons in the rematch?
You know, under the circumstances that, you know, there is no playoff hopes for this team, you know, I think we had a great week of practice. You know, everybody was, you know, in tune with everything, you know, from walkthroughs to meetings to actually on the field practicing. So, you know, I thought we had a great week of preparation. You know, now it's just about building those three fires that Coach Shiano talks about and getting prepared mentally, physically, and emotionally for the game.
You know, this is interesting because fans would love this kind of stuff. They saw what happened, unfortunately, to this team down the stretch last season. They're seeing a team right now with five losses in a row getting ready to play here in this game. You can speak to it having been here a year ago, having been here now. And there's some other teammates. Gerald McCoy was talking about this just the other night, who said this is a different end to the season. Just tell me what you sense being around your defensive teammates, especially in the meeting room, film room, on the practice field, with the effort, the intensity, the things that you're doing at the end of this year.
You know, everybody's got a bad taste. You know, going out with five losses in a row is definitely not the way to go. You know, we definitely want to get back in the win column this week and try to build some momentum going into next year. You know, a lot of guys, you know, have put themselves at high standards for this season, you know, and a lot of those goals are unreachable right now. But, you know, it's all about building up the base, you know, and just trying to get ready for next year now. You know, there's a lot of guys here that's uncertain about their, you know, future as a Buck. So now they're just trying to, you know, show the coaches that they belong here on this team. And along with myself, you know, I just want to show that I want to be here. I want to play for the Bucks. So on Sunday, I'm going to go out and give it everything I have, whether we're losing 21 to nothing or we're up 50 to nothing. You know, that's just the type of players that we have on this team.
And you said something there that others have said, including the head coach. You only have 16 opportunities to go and do this. This is the 16th and final opportunity to demonstrate to this staff, to the organization, to everybody, what you can do. Those are valuable opportunities. This is the last one of those opportunities.
Definitely. You only get 16 promised. You know, we weren't fortunate enough this year to get any extra. So, you know, in the 16 that we have, you know, guys have gone out and fought and toughed it out and played through injury and played hard, because we understood that at the beginning of the season we only have 16 guaranteed. You know, the postseason was not guaranteed to us, and, you know, and we didn't make the plays and play as well as we needed to late in the stretch to get any more opportunities. So guys are making the best out of the last one that they have here.
All right, so we've got a lot of different things to cover. On Wednesday night, there were four Buccaneers recognized by their peers in the NFC to go to the Pro Bowl. You know where I'm going with this. One of those fortunate four out of the group of Vincent Jackson, Doug Martin, and Rondae Barber as alternates is starting on the NFC team, and that is your teammate, Gerald McCoy. What does it mean to you? You've been around Gerald now for a couple of years. What does it mean to the defensive line to have one of your own get recognized by your NFC opponents and the other teams in the conference that voted, and coaches also in the NFC that voted for Gerald to get in? What does that mean as a teammate of Gerald's, and what does that mean for this defensive line to have somebody get recognized like that?
You know, we're all proud of Gerald. You know, Gerald's an elite player. You know, he comes to work with the mindset of getting better at everything every day. You know, he's the type of guy that you want to talk to when you're having a bad day. He's the guy that's going to pick you up during practice if you're not feeling well. He's going to say, hey, man, come on, don't worry about what's going on. Let's just go. You know, let's just play ball. Let's just get better. You know, he's that guy that's always building up the defense. You know, he takes pride in what he does. And this offseason, you know, I watched Gerald a lot closer than I watched a lot of people because I wasn't able to be on the field. So I was talking to Gerald, and he was talking to me, telling me, don't worry about it, B. We're gonna be fine. You know, when you come back, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And it just kind of made me feel like I was still a part of the team. You know, whereas in I couldn't really be out there with the rest of the guys. So
right.
He would always check on me and walk by the weight room and nod and you know, just throw his hands up and let me know that, hey, we're still waiting on you, bud. You know, things like that. So I'm very proud of Gerald, and I think that the others in the NFC proved. You know, he proved to himself, to them, you know, that he's, you know, a capable player at this league, and he's playing at a high level.
And the interesting thing is, the last 2 years he went through injury at the end of the season that cut his season short. So he's been through what you were going through at the beginning of this season, where you want to be out there, but you physically cannot be out there. And so that, I mean, he's been there and can identify with what you were going through.
Definitely. You know, last year when we lost Gerald, you know, I can see the hurt in his heart and on his face, you know, that he was done for the year, that he couldn't be out there with us. But every chance he got, you know, he was in the meetings. He was trying to help us. When we were on a losing streak, a 10-game losing streak, Gerald was in meetings and said, hey, guys, let's just try this. You know, try this with your pass rush, or try this with your run technique. Just trying to help us build and win, even though he knew, you know, that he couldn't be out there physically. You know, he was there with us mentally and emotionally. So, you know, he's that type of guy, you know, and we love him. You know, he's the leader of our defensive line. He's the leader on this team, you know. And once you earn the respect as a captain from your teammates, you know, it says a lot about you.
Voice of Daquan Bowers, number 91, with us in his second year here with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we look forward to spending the entire hour here with him. Again, we will take your phone calls, your comments. Hey, real quick before the timeout, it was Christmas week this week, and again, we had Gerald in here on Wednesday talking about Christmas, but you guys as a D-line got to do something neat at the end of last week for a bunch of underprivileged families in the Tampa Bay area with the D-line Does Christmas, where the families got invited here, and you took care of them, and then you went to the local Target as a sponsor and you took care of them at Target with a shopping spree. What was it like for the defensive line you included to give back right before Christmas to those families, Daquan?
You know, it was an amazing opportunity. You know, we were all blessed to be in the situation that we're in, and you know, we all came up with the idea to, let's do something special for kids that's underprivileged, you know, guys and girls that don't have the you know, opportunity to get many gifts for Christmas or what they want for Christmas. So, you know, we came up with it, and we got with the staff here at the Bucks, and we planned it out. You know, the families had no idea what was going on. They didn't know about any of the gifts or that they were going to even meet us or anything. You know, we just kind of told them, hey, we're going to give you a private tour of the Bucks facility.
Right.
We're going to take you around the locker room and show you where the guys hang out and this and that. So, you know, when we came out, and they seen us, you know, and some of them started crying, some of them started cheering. They were just so happy to see us, you know, to have that type of effect on a person. You know, it's just amazing. You know, you're just blessed beyond for somebody to think that highly of you. So, you know, we got together, and it was a good event. You know, we gave the parents something.
So they didn't even realize there's more than just meeting us and taking the
tour.
They
had no idea.
So tell us about that, because then you went around the corner towards the weight room, and
yep,
there's packages everywhere for the kids, right?
Exactly. You know, we started off, we told them that we were going to give them a tour. We didn't tell him that we had gifts for him. Then Gerald surprised him and said, hey, we're not only giving you a tour, but we have something for you. We gave him a toy helicopter to every kid that was there from Hess gas station.
There you go.
We gave him a toy helicopter, and then we said, that's not it. We have something else. This is for the parents. So we asked every parent in there to raise their hand. You know, we gave them a gas card. So after that, we kind of told them, yeah, now we're going to take you on the tour of the facility. So we started out around the back of the building. We said, hey, this is the lunchroom. We're going to take you guys out by the weight room. And right before we got to the weight room, we told them to stop. You know, we talked to them for a while, and we was like, well, this isn't the last gift that we have for y'all. We have a few more. So we told them, on the count of three, we want everybody to run around the corner and find the bag with your names on them. There were multiple bags. Some would have the kid's first name.
Wow.
And some would have the kid's last name. They had to locate every bag that had their name on it. And just to see the kids in chaos looking for their bags and looking for their names and their parents just sitting back there and, oh, you know, it was just amazing. You know, it touched a lot of us, you know.
That I mean, that's what it's all about, to give back, is it not?
Definitely was. And it was definitely a sight and definitely a kind gesture.
And then our friends at Target also supplied a shopping spree. You guys, after this, after all of that, went to Target with the kids up and down the aisles.
Exactly.
You guys as a D-line in the store with them, helping them pick out gifts.
That was amazing. You know, after they found their gifts in their bags, we told them, there's one more gift. And we told them to hold their wristband up. Each family had a different color wristband. And we said, on the count of three, go to the buses that match your wristband. And we have a shopping spree at Target for you all, and we're going to go shopping. And they were just like, oh, wow. And then they were just, the tears started flowing. You could just see how happy the parents were and how joyful and grateful they were for us. You know, and that's what it's all about, being able to give back.
Wow. Neat stuff here from Daquan Bowers and the D-line doing that last Thursday. And again, thanks to Hess and Target and all the sponsors that were involved with that event the other night. We need to pause here. Again, we'll come back with your phone calls. We got a lot to talk to Daquan about, including the end of the season here. We'll talk about the Atlanta Falcons as well. Final game of 2012 Sunday at the Georgia Dome. Stay with us. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network. We are back in with number 91. Daquan Bowers joining us here this evening, talking Buccaneers and Falcons and the defensive line and his comeback story this year after suffering an Achilles injury in the offseason, able to come back back in October, actually, for the Thursday night game against the Minnesota Vikings. We'll take your phone calls at 990-4620. If you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free 1-800-596-BUCKS to join us. 1-800-596-2827. Take me back to that Thursday night in Minnesota where you probably had an inkling, you know, that week I may get activated here. Now you are activated in what, the seventh game of the season. What was it like to get out there in the Metrodome after you had been waiting to get out there? Take me back to that night.
You know, it was amazing. You know, the week before when I officially came back to practice, you know, coach told me to take it light, don't try to overdo it. But, you know, I was definitely over excited. So, you know, I was ready to do more than what he wanted me to do. But that Thursday, you know, he talked to me that morning. You know, he asked me how I felt about the game plan and asked me what I thought about playing. You know, and I told him, coach, you know, I think I'm ready to come back. And he said, I hear you. And he kind of smirked at me a little bit, you know. And later on that day, you know, we talked again. And, he said, well, we're going to take you to the stadium and have you do some drills and kind of see how you feel. I said, fine.
Okay.
So we went, and I did everything that he asked me to do. And he said, well, we're going to activate you tonight. So, you know, get your mind right and get ready. And I was just like a big sigh of relief, like, thank you. You know, I just couldn't wait to get back. You know, being out of football, I was out of football from May until October. So that's the longest I've ever been away from the game. So it was definitely, you know, an itch to get back on the field, especially when you see the guys, you know, out there every day and they're practicing and they're playing in the games and they're having fun. And, you know, you just want to be a part of that.
So you were limited some, but as you got out there and started playing in that Minnesota game, the next week in Oakland, did it take some time, or were you, you know, mentally, physically ready to go, or did it take a little time to build up over those first two or three weeks to try to get it back?
You know, physically and mentally, I think I was ready to go. You know, I made up in my mind I wasn't gonna to baby my injury. You know, I was ready to really see how it held up against the odds. So, you know, I was ready to cut it loose, and that's what I did. I didn't really baby it. I didn't really think about it. I just kind of went. The only thing that was tough was, you know, I hadn't done anything football like in so many months that I was really wasn't in the best football shape. You know, I had been running in the pool and doing cardio, but it's nothing like playing football, you know, in between the lines, first, second, third down. So
you can't replicate that, right? The speed, the contact, you just cannot.
You have to go through it. So, you know, after about 2 weeks, I say, you know, I was really back in the swing of things. You know, I worked on it in practice. I asked coach just, you know, just increase my reps in practice so I can kind of get the flow of everything. If I had to do eight straight, you know, it's for the better. You know, so that's what he did. You know, we just kind of had a plan and kind of took it day by day, and it worked. You know, and coach told me just trust me, and I did. So we got it done.
As this season has gone on, has it gotten easier? Have you, from a physical standpoint and all of the above, to get it going? And you played a lot more. You've been seeing a lot more action out there. What about it as the year has gone on now, the last few weeks?
You know, it hasn't even been an issue. It hasn't come up in the topic of discussion. You know, I think Daniel Tionis, I'm averages about 40 plays a game, and I think I'm right at 37 or 38. So it's not a big drop off from my plays and his plays or me and Michael's plays. You know, we all kind of have a 3-man rotation, and it kind of rolls like that. You know, the whole issue about being out of shape hasn't been an issue at all. You know, I kind of worked myself back into shape. You know, and the physicality of the game hasn't even been an issue at all either. You know, I kind of thought that, you know, maybe it might hurt a little bit, or maybe it might not be used to the pushing and the pulling and the running and the cutting, but hasn't been an issue since I strapped the cleats on for the first time.
Voice of number 91, Daquan Bowers. And again, we're looking forward to all of the stories and the insight from him for the full hour on Buccaneers Total Access, our final one of this 2012 regular season with the players on Friday nights. And we've appreciated all the guys being willing to give their time on Friday to get in here. Friday night is typically a player's night to go and do their different stuff. And the guys like Daquan have been kind to get in here and talk to you, the Buck fans. And here we go with that. Let's begin on the phones with John in Clearwater. You are up here with Daquan Bowers. Hey, John.
Hey, fellas, what's going on?
What's going on, John?
And not much, Daquan. Hey, word on the street is that you're a heck of a guitar player and songwriter. Is that true?
Don't be modest. Come on.
I hate the brag, but I do a little bit. Yes, sir. It's true.
You can play a little bit. All right.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I heard from someone in South Carolina. I was up there a couple weeks ago, and he says, "Man, he goes, not only was Dave not a heck of a player, but his dad was a world class musician."
That's definitely true. Now, my father taught me how to play. So,
well, let's get into that story, John. Thanks for the call. Did I hear Did I hear a dog barking there in the background? John's got a wild Friday night going.
Yes,
All right. So we had a chance to talk with you about this, and Buccaneer fans may be familiar with parts of this or some of this story. But your father, your late father, was part of a big gospel group in the South Carolina area, in the Carolinas, and was big into music. And you kind of pick it up from there of what it was like growing up with a dad who played the guitar and was leading a gospel group, a very successful gospel group. What was that like?
Definitely. My father, the late Dennis Bowers, a part of a group from Brooklyn, New York, called Tommy Ellison and the Singing Stars. You know, and my father started in this group when he was 19 years old. You know, and he played up until his death. You know, he was 51 when he passed. You know, a lot of times my father was gone for weeks at a time. They were touring. So a lot of time it was just me, my mom, my sisters, and my brothers, you know, and I didn't have him to actually teach me how to play. You know, I just watched videos and music of the, you know, CDs and tapes, cassette tapes back then, you know, and just try to match my fingers to what I was hearing, you know. And when he come home, he would just clean it up. He was like, "No, that's not how you do it. This is how you do it." So after a couple of years of that, you know, I kind of got good. You know, I started playing when I was four, but my dad would not even let me play in front of my grandmother, who would come over to visit at the house until I was probably about 13 or 14 years old. He wouldn't let me play in front of anyone.
You were forbidden from playing for anybody?
Anybody.
In public at all?
Not even in public. If we had guests coming in the house and I was in the room practicing, I had to put it away.
Because he had that high of a standard for playing.
He had that high of a standard.
Okay.
I was always getting mad and be like, "Dad, well, I'm just trying to practice." He's like, "Nah. This ain't the time and the place. We'll do it later."
Okay. Now, this is the fun part of the story, because he's got a very famous guitar that he's playing the whole time.
Denise.
Denise was his guitar. Now, were you ever – I don't remember this part of the story when you were telling it before. Were you ever allowed to mess with, much less touch or play Denise while Dad, you know, had Denise and was in the band?
You know, I had to break it down like this. It's kind of like a kid on Christmas when you finally get to open the presents. You're mm-hmm. just overly joyed. I maybe got to touch Denise twice. The whole from 4 up until 13 or 14, maybe 3 times maximum. Maybe okay. I would say once every couple of years he would
but
let me.
But certainly never get to play Denise, the guitar.
Couldn't touch her, couldn't do anything unless he was sitting right beside me. So it wasn't happening, you know. And when I got up in age and I started, you know, playing with him after the lead singer of the group got sick, you know, I kind of just was like, well, I'm playing now, so I'm gonna just take her with me. So I kind of stole it, and he never got it back.
Wait a minute. Okay, so that's how that worked. Now, you told us the story, again, as we talked with Daquan Bowers about his musical ability, that you started to play with Denise. And what was that like to be I mean, this is the famous guitar that your dad in the group's playing. Wait a minute. I kind of hear something. Wait a minute. Are we doing this on the air? Okay, yeah, we're going to do it in just a second, I think. All right, but anyway, you start playing with what is that like with dad's guitar, with the famous guitar?
It's amazing, man. You know, my first time I actually got to play in a concert with them and play Denise, you know, it was unbelievable. I think I was about 14 years old. In Douglas, Georgia, I was filling in. My dad, he took the guitar off, and he kind of told me to come grab it. And I grabbed it, and I stood in the back, and I was just holding it. And I was just like, well, I do know this stuff. So I put it on, and I started playing. And the guys of the band kind of turned and looked, and they're like, okay, we didn't know he can play. So after the show, you know, we finished the concert, and they were like, man, we couldn't tell that it wasn't your father. So then he was like, this is the time I've been waiting on. Now you're ready. Now right. you're ready. You can play in front of people, and you can go do your own thing.
All right. So this begs the question now, because we asked you before, you still have Denise. Where is Denise, the guitar?
Denise is in a very forbidden place.
Okay. All right. And how often does Denise come out, and how often do you play Denise?
I grab her at least once a week. You know, I was actually messing with her today. I was changing her strings and cleaning her up. She's a, you know, the season's over Sunday, and her season's officially starting Monday. So, you know.
So, where do you play anywhere in and around this area? Do you only play back home when you play with the group, or with, you know, just playing Denise, or what's the story?
You know, while I was hurt, I wasn't traveling with the team, so a lot of concerts I could just, you know, catch a plane there and right back. You know, I did some shows. I went to New York. I went to Boston. But once I started playing, you know, my father made it clear that when football was number one, that's exactly what it was, you know. And during the season, Denise had to go on the shelf. So during the season, I hardly ever touch her. You know, I just keep an eye on her, pick her up a few times a month, and put her right back and put her away. But, you know, I never do concerts. This is a couple concerts coming up will be the first time, a couple concerts that I've done probably since September, so I'm looking forward to that.
So what does it mean to you to carry on your father's legacy here, that you are playing that guitar and doing something that he loved and something that he enjoyed?
Man, you know, it's amazing. You know, the legacy that my father built with his guitar is priceless. You know, I think he's one of the most respected guitar players of the gospel era, that he, you know, he created things with his guitar that people use today. He created this trick called a knob trick, and that's where it sounds like the guitar is squealing and talking. You know, it's a really nice, and it took me forever to learn how to do that darn thing.
Did he try to show you that, or did you just have to try to copy it?
He tried to show me, but it was so complicated that it took a while. And when I finally got it, is when we finally started doing the knob tricks and the gimmicks on stage. It took a while. It was a while.
Okay, now I believe we have this ready to go. Are we ready to try this? This is actually Daquan playing Denise here with Tommy Ellison and the Singing Stars. Let's see if we got some of this. How about this? Grandma's House.
Live. This is my father and the group. 1992, live in Atlanta, Georgia.
Really?
That's exactly what it is.
He's playing Denise right now.
He's playing Denise. And this is the group. And
how those cool
guys,
is that?
Those guys, besides my father and Tommy, that group was together for 33 years. My daddy was the baby of the group. He came in 79. The rest of those two guys that's on that video, Oscar Hartnett, he's been in the group now for 47 years.
47 years.
And Sam Williams helped started the group with Tommy Ellison back in the early 50s, late 50s. So, no, those guys.
That's 50 years.
Yeah, these guys have been doing this their whole life.
That is amazing. And now, so will you play with them at some point? Will you
I
just
do
your thing? You'll play with them?
When I travel, this is the group that I'm
there
with.
You go.
You know, because Tommy's dead and he's gone on, you know, we changed the name from Tommy Ellison and the Singing Stars to Tommy Ellison's Legendary Singing Stars or the Legendary Singing Stars.
Wow.
Yep.
So you're carrying on that legacy for your father, for Tommy, and
definitely
for all of that. Do you feel pressure in that situation? Because it's not the football field. It's not what you're used to. Do you feel nerves? Are you excited doing that?
My first, you know, a lot of people ask me this question. They ask me, what's the difference? You know, the first time that I played in Death Valley at Clemson in front of 90,000 people, I had a jersey on my back that said Bowers, but I had a helmet covering my face. The first time that I played in a large gospel concert in Florence, South Carolina at the Civic Center in front of about 9,000 people, I was in a suit with nothing to cover my face, nothing to cover the sweat. So it was a little nerve-wracking, but, you know, once that intro song kicks off, you're kind of mellowed out, and you know, and I love it. You know, I wouldn't change it for anything today. I love it.
All right, so who on the team, and we'll move off of this here in just a couple moments, but it's fascinating stuff with Daquan Bowers here, number 91, talking about playing the guitar. Who on the team wants to know something about the guitar, how to learn the guitar, how to play the guitar? Anybody? Do you give guitar lessons is my question.
You know, I've never given a guitar lessons, but, you know, Connor Barth brought his guitar in. When I told him I could play, he brought it in one time, and I kind of
– Can Connor play?
I stroked a few things for him. He actually can. I've heard him play. He's pretty good.
How about that?
Yep.
He ain't touching Denise, though.
No.
Not going to happen.
No. And Gerald McCoy plays the drums.
Really?
Yes, he does.
So we could have maybe a D-line band with you on a guitar, Gerald on the drums. Who would do vocals? Come on.
Oh, man. I think I may have to take that role.
You would do vocals? Can anybody else do vocals on the D-line?
Oh, man.
Bennett?
But you know what?
Roy Miller?
Gary Gibson plays the guitar.
Gary could be in the band.
You know, I think we would have to find something for Michael and Adrian and Roy to do.
All right. So, yeah, there you go. So a little bit with Daquan Bowers about playing the guitar and playing Denise. So Denise is in a safe place. Denise will come out. This might be you playing Denise here off of YouTube. I'm not sure. Or it might be the band. I'm not sure. But this is good stuff. Is that Denise?
That's Denise. That's Tommy Ellison and the Singing Stars. That's my father playing there.
How about that? He's got a smile on his face, Buccaneer audience, and rightfully so. So good stuff with the legacy of Dennis Bowers, Daquan's dad, and Denise, the guitar. Love it. We will pause here, be back. We'll talk some Atlanta Falcons and some other stuff, too, but that's great stuff here on Buccaneers Total Access. Stay with us. We are back with number 91, Daquan Bowers, our last installment of Friday Night Buccaneers Total Access here on the Buccaneers Radio Network as this 2012 season is coming to a close with the Atlanta Falcons. Again, if you've got questions, comments, you can join us. This is how you do it, 990-4620 if you're in Hillsboro. If you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll-free 1-800-596-BUCKS. If you're a Buck fan listening in with a question or comment outside the Tampa Bay area, 1-800-596-BUCKS to join us here tonight, toll-free. You can also tweet a question at Buck Sideline Guy, B-U-C, Buck Sideline Guy for Daquan Bowers here tonight. In fact, on Twitter, I got a question from a Buck fan about Michael Bennett, Mike Bennett and the job that he's done this year, and about being interchangeable with Michael Bennett. What about being teammates with number 71, the job he's done, and alternating in and out of there with him in the lineup?
You know, Michael's a, you know, he's a scrappy guy. You know, I call him the scrapster. You know, he's a scrappy guy. It may not look pretty, but he gets the job done. You know, he's a heck of a player. You know, he's going to give you everything he got, hurt, bruised up, in pain. He's going to go hard. He's going to do everything he can to help this team, you know. And I'm grateful that I've had 2 years with Mike. Mike has taught me a lot, you know.
Give me an example.
You know, Mike has taught me the pass rushes of the game. You know, when I got here, we didn't really have veteran pass rushers on the team, you know, besides Gerald. And Mike was here, so he was just like, man, you know, you should try this. You know, you have a body like Michael Strahan. This works for him. You know, you could do the Reggie White hump. You can do this. You can do that. You just should try it and just watch film on it. You know, he's just a guy that he's a very outspoken guy. He kind of tells you what he's thinking. He's like, man, I can see it. I can vision you doing that. And I just kind of took heed to it, and I watched it, and I'm like, you're right, man. You know, I've been saying this for a long time, but, you know, just to hear it again and over, it just reiterates what people think about your type of caliber and the size or the body structure that you have to do the job. So, you know.
Interesting for him. I mean, you were drafted in the second round of the draft and came in with a lot of accolades out of Clemson, an All-American out of Clemson. Michael Bennett kind of flew under the radar, undrafted player, was picked up by this team, you know this, off the Seattle Seahawks roster as a player in the 2009 season off of their practice squad. He has now worked himself into a starting role, has worked himself into being obviously a recognizable pass rusher in the NFC and in the NFC South. Just, I mean, that's a different route. Guys take different routes to their success, and Michael Bennett certainly has done it without a whole lot of fanfare at the beginning, but his play has spoken for itself. Your teammate, right?
Definitely, you know, like you said, he's way under the radar. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize that Michael has 9.5 sacks, you know, and he's done a great job, you know, and, you know, the record doesn't show it, but, you know, he's one of the reasons that, you know, we have the sacks that we have. He's done a great job along with Gerald, you know, and, you know, I just think he's done a great, outstanding job under the circumstances that, you know, we've been behind in a lot of games, you know, this year, and teams tend to run the ball more. So, you know, he's done a great job, and I'm proud of him, you know, and I understand that this is his last year. He's in contract negotiations or
right.
Whatever, but, you know, I would love to have him as a teammate again. You know, we all would. You know, he's that type of guy that you want to play with.
There is a business side to what's going on. That's the reality of the NFL. No matter what team you're on, different guys come and go on teams, but certainly I think everybody's in agreement. Love to have Michael Bennett back. Hopefully it does get worked out on that. Back to the phones. There are Buck fans everywhere. We have said this all year, Daquan Bowers. We go to Pennsylvania. Here is Paula in Pennsylvania on with Daquan Bowers on Buccaneers Total Access. Hey, Paula.
I bet you it's my Aunt Paula.
Let's see. Hey, Paula.
Hi.
It is.
Aunt Paula calling in. What's going on, Aunt Paula?
I just had to call.
you had to call in. Okay.
So, and I'm here with my mom, too, Quan, and we just were listening. And we're so proud of the season that you've had so far this year and just the man that you are and what you exemplify. So we just want to say congratulations and keep going.
Thank you. I love you all. Thank you.
All right. Now, first question, Paula, has it stopped snowing? Are you getting snow in Pennsylvania?
It's supposed to start again tonight.
All right. Well, we won't tell you that it was like 65 here in Tampa today.
No, don't tell us.
With this. What does it mean to have your nephew, Daquan, playing not only in the NFL, but to hear this story about carrying on Dennis's legacy and playing in the band and all? What does that mean to you as a relative of his?
Oh, it means so much. Just to see Quan grow from a small child and see what he always just exemplifies being a gentleman and being nice. And just as anybody could be blessed, we know that God definitely is in the blessing business with Quan and how he has persevered throughout with his dad, how he played with his dad, and we are so proud of that, how he continues to play without his dad, and how he just stands as a strong role model for the rest of the family.
Does she have a Daquan jersey? Did you get her Daquan 91?
She does.
You wear that Daquan jersey every Sunday, Paula?
Yes, no one needs to be in the house with me when Daquan is playing, I'm telling you.
He's sacking a quarterback, and Paula's jumping up and down. I love it.
Yes, yes.
Are you recruiting more Buccaneer fans in Pennsylvania?
We're trying.
Okay.
My husband is a diehard Eagles fan.
Oh, boy.
He came down to the game, and I made him wear a Buccaneers t-shirt.
There we go. That's the way to be. Well, Paula, thank you so much. Anything else you want to say to Daquan, Paula?
No, Daquan. Have a happy new year. We love you.
I love you all, too.
Bye-bye.
All right. How cool is that?
That's great.
So Aunt Paula, your aunt, listening there in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Wanted just to say hello. there tonight. You know, you told us a story before. I'd like you to repeat this about your family and about the, around the time of the draft, mm-hmm. When the draft happened in April of 2011. And in this case, the NFL has changed the format of the draft where you were not drafted on the opening night. You had to wait an extra night mm-hmm. for this to go on. But take us back to what that was like to be around friends and family when your name was finally called with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in your little town in South Carolina. Take us back to that whole scene that night.
It was amazing. You know, I was inside in the house, you know, talking. Coach Raheem had called me, of course, right before the official announcement on the NFL Network or whatever mm-hmm. channel that it was on. But we had TVs outside, and, you know, and before I could, you know, tell the great news, my uncle had ran outside and said, it's Tampa Bay, they're on the phone. So I could just hear it from inside the house. The whole yard just blow up. Everybody was yelling and excited. You know, and at one point in time, they had rushed me. I couldn't hear anything that Coach was saying, you know, so I had to kind of tell him, Coach, I can't hear you. Hold on. Let me run down the street. So I had to run down the street to hear everything that he had to say. And on this side of the phone here at One Buck Place, everybody was excited. I could hear coaches. I could hear everybody all excited here. So, you know, it was a great inspiration. And I was just blessed to be able to do that with the people that
I was gonna say,
brought me up. You know,
what does it mean to be standing there realizing an NFL dream with your family, with your friends?
You know, I had everybody there, my family, my sisters, my aunts, my cousins, my grandfather, you know, my brothers, my sisters, everybody was there, you know, my friends, my teachers, everybody, you know, I probably had over 1,000 people in my yard, and I don't think Bamberg, the small town that I'm from, has but 4,000 people. But I had to have 1,000 people there at my house, you know, and we were just all excited, you know, and I just wanted to share that with them because I thought that they played a big role in me being the person that I am, you know, coming from a small town and being able to go off to a major college and play football. And I wanted them to experience this with me. You know, there may not be another guy that wants to stay home on when his dream comes true. So I wanted them to experience this with me. Like, they've never been a part of anything like that. So I wanted them to be the first with me. This was my first time. Wow. I wanted it to be their first time.
Well, it was a neat night, I'm sure. And, of course, you're now in your second season. And Daquan now already with 3 sacks this year after coming off the PUP list at the beginning of the year, not able to be on the roster, but came on the roster in October. So we're looking for big things from number 91 as the year goes on. Again, you can join us on the phones. Also, several of you are tweeting in questions. Joe has an interesting one. Says, what position on the defensive line do you prefer? Do you have a preference, left end, right end? It's not the same. How are they different on the two ends of the line of scrimmage?
You know, I've played both my whole life. You know, from high school, I've played left and right. Clemson, I've played left and right. So I really don't have a preference. You know, whichever side that they want me on or whatever side that the other guy feels comfortable, I'll just go to the opposite side.
How is it different, though? I mean, you're obviously left side, right side. Different, you know, hand on the ground, different step.
Different foot back, different, you know, different push off base, different foot, you know, different hand. You know, different guys just feel comfortable doing different things. So, you know, it's all about being comfortable. You don't want a guy to be on the right side if he's more comfortable on the left. Then you take him out of his game. So we try to work it where everybody's comfortable.
Mark wants to know on Twitter, what kind of guitar is Denise? I may have missed you say it. Is it a Les Paul? Is it a Strat? I'm not a big guitar guy. I know that Les Paul guitars are bigger, but, I mean, get into the technical for the guitar freaks that are out there.
I do have a Les Paul, but Denise is not a Les Paul. She's an American 1964 American-made Fender Stratocaster.
How about that? So she is a Strat.
She's a Strat.
And nobody touches Denise but you?
Nobody touches Denise but me. I don't care where I am. When I fly with Denise, I make it known this is fragile. If anything happens to her, oh my God.
Uh-huh.
I wish I could just take
so
it with
you
me.
Don't buy I was gonna say you don't buy a seat for Denise to sit next to you on the airplane.
I thought about it.
Did you really?
I thought about it, but I don't think they would let me do it. But she's in a hard case, you know. It's locked down. You know, it'll take a lot for something to happen to her in that case.
All right. Take care of the famous Denise, the guitar. 990-4620. If you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, 1-800-596-BUCKS. It is interesting. We're going to Atlanta as part of the end of the regular season, part of New Year's Eve and New Year's weekend. You played at Clemson. You know where I'm going with this. All-American at Clemson. And the Clemson Tigers are playing in Atlanta, but they're playing in Atlanta the next day after we come back against LSU. the timing just didn't work out on it. But what's the deal? The season's going to end. You're going to come back from Atlanta. Are you going to perhaps be able to sneak back up to Atlanta and see Clemson and LSU play in the Chick-fil-A Bowl?
I think I'm on the first thing smoking out of Tampa.
You're going to try to get there?
I'm going to try to get there. You know, I think this is going to be a big game for us, you know, and we got a lot of guys from LSU on this team, so it's been a lot of trash talking.
Oh, boy.
The one thing I just hope doesn't happen is I have to take a picture in an LSU Tiger shirt like I had to do for South Carolina.
So you already had to do that?
I had to take a picture in a South Carolina Gamecock shirt and post it on Facebook and Twitter. And I want to apologize personally to all my fans, my Clemson fans. I'm apologizing to you from the bottom of my heart. But I am a man of my word, and that was the bet. If South Carolina won, that I would take the picture, and I'm sorry. But
well, there are some rivalry bowl games on this team. Mason Foster and Doug Martin already had one with Washington and Boise State. We were talking to Josh Freeman last night because Kansas State plays Oregon, mm-hmm. and that is he and LeGarrette Blount, although he says that LeGarrette's been avoiding him. He doesn't want any part, apparently, of anything with Kansas State. So, so you're saying that there's like a little who's going to wear the other shirt going on.
Yeah.
With who? Are we going to name any names?
Yeah, we got, you know, Jake Cotrera.
So he's going to potentially put a Clemson shirt on?
Yes.
You know, or should I say he is going to put a Clemson shirt on?
Oh, he's going to put it on. I got a nice purple Clemson shirt. I'll make sure I get an orange one because if it's purple, they may think it's LSU. I want to get an orange, bright orange shirt that says Clemson Tigers for him and Pep Livingston.
So they both – all right. We'll
those
see. All right. We'll see what happens there on Monday. I asked you this before. The environment in NFL stadiums are great, but there are some college environments, and you played in one of them, that are also great. You mentioned a little while ago 90,000 people at Death Valley. What is that like to have played in college, and how does that get you ready for the NFL environment?
It's bananas. You know, Clemson, we were blessed, man. We had great fans, and it was loud every game. It doesn't matter if we were playing, you know, South Carolina Gamecocks, or we were playing Bethune-Cookman College. It didn't matter. We had 90,000 strong every game, and they were going to give you their everything. When 12 o'clock hit and kickoff came, it was going to be absolute loudest stadium of the day. And when we come down the hill, it's bananas. You can't hear anything.
And for fans here, they know the SEC, they know Florida, they know, you know, Florida State, they know USF. Howard's Rock is a big deal. Yeah. Howard's Rock is legendary. Tell them about being at the top of the hill, and there is Howard's Rock. What is that? What is it like to touch Howard's Rock and go down the hill?
You know, those are the things that you dream of as a kid, tradition. You know, the tradition of that rock and how many great players have touched that rock and ran down that hill. You know, it's just amazing. You know, I was blessed to be in a situation that I was able to do such a thing, and that's been my dream. You know, to run down the rock and – I mean, rub the rock and run down the hill. And I got –
because there's a sign on the rock that says something that he used to always say, something to the effect of, if you're going to play hard
– if you're not going to give 110%, keep your hands off my filthy rock.
That's
keep
what it
filthy
says.
Filthy hands off my rock, excuse me.
So, in other words, don't be touching that rock unless you're ready to go.
Exactly.
Well, I compared that to running out of the tunnel, sold out, and we've seen it sold out some here in your 2 years that are here. Sold out, bonkers crowd at Raymond James. They're firing cannons.
Oh, man.
This year we've added flames and fireworks and running out of an NFL tunnel. What is that like for players?
It's exciting, man. The cannon might be the best thing since Howard's Rock to me. You know, I love this ship, and I love the cannons, and I love the fire, you know, and coming out of the smoke, it's amazing, man. Coming out the tunnel and hearing all the noise and the firing of the cannons. And the video that they play is amazing. The video that we made, the season opener, oh, it's amazing. It comes
Get
on.
You ready to go?
It does. And you just see Adam Haywood screaming at the top of his lungs with that face. It's amazing, though. I really think they did a great job this year.
Speaking of Haywood, we haven't really gotten into, you know, very much about last Sunday, but the first defensive play of the game, my goodness, it was right in front of me in the left flat. I'm privileged to be down there on the sideline, and I could see the ball coming to Steven Jackson kind of late, and I could see Adam Haywood out of the corner of my eye. My goodness, what a tone setter that was in that moment.
Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad.
Bad in a good way.
Bad for him.
Bad for Steven Jackson.
Good for us.
Yeah. I mean, this is a collision sport, not a contact sport.
This is not a contact sport. Basketball is a contact sport. This is a collision sport.
And you like to collide with quarterbacks, running backs, anybody else you can get your hands on.
Anybody that's in my way.
That's number 91, Daquan Bowers. We will pause. We will talk here in our final segment about the Atlanta Falcons. If you've got calls, comments, 990-4620. Pinellas 727-461-4620, 1-800-596-BUCKS. We'll be back on the Buccaneers Radio Network. We wind it down here on a Friday night edition of Buccaneers Total Access as number 91, Daquan Bowers, sits here with us. We get ready to go to the Georgia Dome for the Atlanta Falcons. More on that in just a couple of moments. Hey, say something about your position coach, Coach Melvin, Coach Brian Cox there. First year with this new staff, Coach Schiano, Bill Sheridan, the defensive coordinator. What has it been like to be out there, practice field, film study, and in the games with the new coaches, the new system, and what you're getting used to and what you're learning from those guys?
You know, I think Coach Schiano has done a great job of making us aware of situations of the National Football League. You know, he does a lot for us and shows us different things that, you know, we may have never known, you know, different rules of the game. And, you know, he's very detailed in what he does and what he shows us. And he shows us, hey, guys, if this happens, this is what we don't need to do. This is what we need to do. If this happens, we want you to do this. We don't need you to do this. Just be a smart. He's very, very, very intelligent guy. And he's shown us how to be a smart football player.
Gerald McCoy has said in here that, and Mike Williams said this too, we have him on the radio all the time, there is not a situation that we haven't practiced, that we haven't at least gone over a few times, whatever it is, deficit on the clock, winning late in the game, you know, third and long in this situation, we have practiced it, and you're shaking your head yes while I'm saying this.
It's definitely true, you know, and we've definitely practiced it. Those guys are right. You know, we practice it all the time. That's why everyone asks about the Carolina game, or, you know, we're always coming back because we've practiced those situations so many times. It's you know, it's like knowing the back of our hand. We know how to execute, how to get it done, you know, and we've made a few less plays than we should have. But, you know, just like in the Carolina game, you know, little time, we need to score this amount of points and 2-point conversion. You know, we've practiced that a million times. So when it was time to for the live bullets, you know, we were like, okay, let's go. You know, he's prepared as well with every situation possible. So, you know, he's done a great job in that sport.
What does it mean? I mean, you have had the opportunity to get out there as a young guy. There's some other young guys that have had an opportunity. Levante David is one of those. Just real quick, I mean, you're nodding your head again here. What about that young man finishing up a rookie season, leading this team in tackles, one of the top tacklers in the NFL? What is that like?
You know, it's breathtaking. When I see Levante, I think of Derrick Brooks, you know, one of the best weak side linebackers to do what he did. You know, and Levante, he has that instinct about him. You know, he has that downhill, right at you, right now type of play, you know. And it's hard to find, especially from young guys like ourselves, you know, guys that'll see you with the ball and take off downfield to hit you. You know, most guys want to wait and try to wait for you to come to them, but if he see you with the ball, he's going directly towards you right now. He's not going to wait, and that's what we need on this team, you know. And I think he was a great pick for us last year in the draft. You know, we need more guys like him. You know, he's done a great job, and I'm very proud of him. Doesn't say much. He's our middle linebacker, so he doesn't wear a captain sign, but he's the captain of our defense. You know, when he's talking, nobody else is talking. We're listening to him because he's going to get us in the right situation. He's going to make the calls and the checks, and we're going to go with it. And he's done a great job this year.
Mark Barron is another young guy back there in that secondary who can bring it, especially with the contact part of the game, physical part of the game. Again, what's it been like to be out there on the field, meeting room, whatever, with that young man?
You know, you don't hear Mark at all. You just kind of feel him. You know, you don't hear him. You don't hear him say anything. You just see him next to you laying guys out. You know, and like I said, it's an honor to play with those guys, you know, with guys of that type of caliber and, you know, with the type of hustle that they play with. You know, it's amazing. You know, I'm grateful for guys like that.
All right, we've got a few moments left here. Tyler wants to know on Twitter, what's the mindset going into this game with the playoffs not on the line? You kind of shared this earlier in the show, but repeat it here for those that haven't heard it. It's the final game of the regular season here with Atlanta.
You know, this is our Super Bowl. You know, we don't have any more games left, so we're going to treat this like our Super Bowl. You know, whether Atlanta plays, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, or whoever, you know, we're going to attack this like – this is the game to go to the Super Bowl for us. You know, we're going to give it everything we have. We're going to go out. We're on a mission to win. You know, we're not going just to let them beat us and be done with the season. We're going to Atlanta to win. No matter how it's done, we're going to win.
I know one of the things the coach was saying, we may see Luke McCown at quarterback some, maybe as soon as the first half. We may see, you know, backup running backs like Snelling and backup You might see some backup players on the offensive line. As a player, you got to kind of prepare that it's going to be the starters, and then again, it may not be the starters. It's a little odd in that regard here in the final game. But what about that?
You know, regardless of who plays, you know, we're going on there with the mission to beat the Atlanta Falcons. You know, whether Luke's at quarterback or Matt Ryan's at quarterback, we're prepared as if Matt Ryan's the quarterback. So regardless of what happens, you know, we're going down there with the mindset that they're going to play the entire game. If they pull those guys in the first quarter or the fourth quarter, then we'll adjust to that. But right now, we're going down there with the mindset that we're going to play their starters. And whether they want to play hard, we're going to play as hard as with everything that we've got.
You know, this the game back at the end of November where, I mean, that fourth quarter alone was, as I like to joke, like a week of General Hospital with all the soap opera subplots and back and forth. And you guys had the lead and they took it back. And then you got a field goal to get the lead. And then they go and get a touchdown. And how much do you take away watching the film from that game 5 or 6 weeks ago that you will apply to Sunday?
Oh, everything. You know, we need to focus on our missed opportunities in that game. You know, there was a lot of missed opportunities on offense and defense, you know, and that's what we've been kind of trying to focus on. You know, we've left a lot on the table, and we just need to cut down on mistakes and mental mistakes and, you know, just try to do our best to execute the game plan, because every game – except maybe one, we've been right in the mix. You know, we've been right there. We're a player too short, so we're trying to take it to the next level and execute those plays to the best of our ability to put us in situations to win, so we don't have to try to fight back in the fourth quarter, or it's not close in the fourth quarter that we're ahead.
Right. We got about 60 seconds left. A lot is being said about this being essentially like a launching point, a start to 2013. Even though it's the second to last day of 2012, this team can look at it as build on something for next year, right? Real quick?
Definitely. No, this game, like you said, it's the last game of 2012, but it's definitely a focal point for us for the start of our next year. You know, this is the base that we're building. You know, it's been a great year. You know, didn't end the way we wanted it to, but it's definitely going to be better next year.
Get after them on Sunday. Daquan, you were a treat tonight. Thank you. We appreciate it. Good luck Sunday. We'll see you Sunday.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
There is number 91, Daquan Bowers. My thanks to Eric Sachs, Jeff Ryan here at One Buck Place. That'll do it for our Friday night editions of Buccaneers Total Access. We'll have one more Total Access on Monday at 5. General Manager Mark Dominic will be with us to wrap up the season after we're done in Atlanta on Sunday. We'll talk to you from the Georgia Dome next on Sunday at noon on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Good night.